His life evolves around love, love for self and love for the patient in front of him. One of his mentors, the great Robert Fulford D.O., said love holds everything together. All people are lovable because of their inherent health, however great or little it may be. The person's health, according to Dr. Friedman, is vastly more intelligent than the provider. In his practice, the provider is to be in tune with health, or in tune with what may be lacking inherent motion. This health is perceived through stillness. Perception, he says, is not a projection. Perception is not willed. Perception should be of what is true. Enjoy this conversation, which bounces between the physical and the spiritual. This is episode 102 of the Osteopathic Manipulative Medicine podcast, where we share clinical stories and pearls related to osteopathic medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ben Green, a third-year osteopathic neuromusculoskeletal medicine resident at Michigan State University. Our guest this morning has been a practicing physician since 1985, initially in family practice and then specializing in osteopathic manual medicine. He has written professionally, lectured and mentored current and aspiring medical students, and served as president of the Osteopathic Cranial Academy. His deep passion for the principles and philosophy of traditional osteopathy has led him to understand himself and others as a unit of mind, body, and spirit. First inspired and taught by his physician mother, he has devoted his life to service, offering hope to those with chronic pain conditions. Among other rewards, his practice has led him to make sacred pilgrimages to South Asia and deeply explore his own inner landscape in a quest for spiritual realization. These experiences are captured in his book, Where Spirit Touches Matter, A Journey Towards Wholeness. Besides being an author, he is the devoted father of three grown sons, Benji, Daniel, and Jacob. He lives with his soulmate and wife, Cherie, in San Mateo, California. We welcome to the podcast Dr. Melvin R. Friedman, D.O., and Fellow of the Cranial Academy. Dr. Friedman, thank you for being on the podcast this morning.
Well, thank you. What an intro. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great honor to have you. You're in California. It's bright and early. I'm on East Coast time in Michigan. So thanks for getting up early and being with us this morning.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So let's just jump right into it. There's so much that I'm interested in hearing about from you. And we're going to start out. This is kind of a tough question. If you had to describe yourself for our audience so that they can get to know you a little bit better, how would you describe yourself in one or two sentences?
Okay, well, that is a great question. And I've been pondering this a little bit. So I was thinking if I was to write my own eulogy right now, and I hope that in stating this about myself, others wouldn't find this controversial. But in my thinking, to say that what mattered to me most, that what I cared about was being devoted to service, and that I always aspired to be a better person and a better human being, and that I was on a spiritual path, a spiritual seeker, and I have always strived to see osteopathy as a life principle and a vehicle for evolution, trying to develop compassion for myself and others. And then most importantly, I was fortunate in marriage. So somebody was very kind to me to stay with me all these years. So that's my little summary.
Yeah, that's great. Can you talk a little bit about what you said about osteopathy?
Yes. So that's a great question. And it's something that I hope I can translate, because for me, I'm one of the people that, unlike a lot of my peers who feel that osteopathy is part and parcel OMM, and you know, you couldn't separate OMM from osteopathy, I've tended largely because of my path to feel that osteopathy for me is really about the principles more than the expression through OMT, even though I'm passionate and I love OMT and it's my way, but the principles of osteopathy, especially that to think about, we learn as components, mind, body, and spirit, but at the same time, it's one unity of function. So when we are engaged with another human being and seeing the fullness of the expression of their humanity and how structure and function in the mind, in the body, and in the spirit, each component of structure and function in each of those arenas, all is an excuse me, all is an expression of one life manifestation, is a life pursuit that not only that we live that life, that we're never separate from our spiritual life, we're never separate from our emotional life, and we're never separate from the architectural somatic life. And each of those permeate each other, and to enter the world that way and to be in service of other people that way, it's so vastly greater than what we might think. Well, the opposite would be reductionistic or allopathic medicine, where you strive to take things out of context to be able to engage it in a way that you can have leverage or a fulcrum with the part. And in osteopathy, to see that life is always evolving for its own expression towards some potential that is vastly more than we could ever imagine. And all those parts, aspects of the self are all present on every level. Now that for me is a life. So that's an aspiration. Then the idea that with OMT, that when we think about the principles that in a world, because we're embodied, a world of cause and effect, where not in unity, we're in a reactive physics universe. And that's because of that, there's leverage, there's fulcra, there's consolidation. And in the flow of things, we're the beautiful organism, biological entity, that we're adaptive and we're in a process where there's ebb and flow and a restitution of homeostasis. But then these things become self-perpetuating. And then with OMT, the idea that to understand a fulcra and that we could, then what's our role? What's our engagement with that? And what are we really serving? Not the specific parts, but a balance in the whole, where the whole human being can be expressed back into the flow of the destiny that was promised at conception. So it's a big thing. It's a big thing that people come in, they would never be a part. They would never be a pathology or even a disease. They could never be, because even that disease has a spiritual side, and it's inseparable from that person's humanity. So you can see, I could go on about this one, but
no, this is great.
But so that's the idea that I talk often that osteopathy in itself is, I don't consider, because I think by definition, you know, it's not a religion. It's not itself necessarily a full way of life, but it is a spiritual path in that that our mind is focused on the whole, and the whole incorporates the spirit. And so in that regard, we're always resonating or in relationship with something much bigger than what the presentation might be. There's always one eye on the idea of what the possibility is and what the whole is. And so in that regard, it's a spiritual path. And then we bring to it our own growth, our own maturity, our own learning. So it's a lifetime, lifetime venture of expansion. And so it's not only an incredible thing for us as practitioners, but also what a way to address suffering, which is the human condition. And then when people walk in and whatever their chief complaint is, or the what they perceive as the source of their suffering, in itself is always a small part of what the wholeness of the human suffering is, and only relative to the suffering that is part of their life, but also reflective of all of us in the human condition, that we can't escape the human condition, which is inescapable suffering, at least in the Buddhist way, you know. So
So some follow-up questions.
Yes.
I love how you're looking at the wholeness of each person that's coming in to see you.
Yeah.
For whatever reason that might be, you brought up the point of human beings. We obviously live in a embodied reality, it seems to be. I would say, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned we're in a body, there is cause and effect, but we also have mind, we also have spirit as part of who we are as people, as individuals. When someone comes in, and I presume they come in saying, "Dr. Friedman, you know, I have and migraines, 2 to 3 migraines a week."
Yeah.
And they all started after I had this motor vehicle accident 10 years ago. I've seen neurology and they have me on these medications. What is your approach to that patient, and how are you just addressing structure and function in the body, in the physical body? And if not, how do you address the body, the mind, and the spirit in that patient encounter?
Yeah. So this is a super important question. And there, I have two immediate things to lead with that. So one is that as a precondition, so when people come into my office and we start chatting, so I have a sofa in my workspace, and I sit by the table, and then the patient will usually sit on the sofa. And this is an extension of something that Dr. Fulford used to teach us, you know, and he was the first physician that I ever heard that used the word openly about love and love for our patients, the power of love. And this became something that was second nature for me, that I like people to check in. I like them that we make a contact. But more than that, there's a moment when we're engaged with another person in the spirit of love that I'm looking for a moment. It's on a feeling level now. I don't think about it so much, but we'll be talking and there's a moment of acknowledgement that I found something that is lovable, or I love the other person. And that's the beginning of the treatment. So the treatment is now we've had a true meeting, and the groundswell of that interaction is the love I have that I can perceive in this other person. And then I say, let's get to work. So then the person sits on the table. So that's the first thing. Is
Dr.
that?
Friedman.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about how you're understanding the concept of love? Because I think love has so many different meanings for people.
Yeah. So that's so true. That you're asking great questions. So on one level, just as people, so this is, that's a great question. Thank you. So just as people, we're interacting. And so here, I don't even know what you look like, but we're talking for the first time right now, mm-hmm. but we're having a meeting and we're engaging with each other. And so, as you and I are talking, the pacing, your kindness, your patience with me, the depth of your listening. So on one level, I'm having a response of something that draws me in, that we're becoming connected in our engagement to be present in the moment together. Then on a level of people, as separate people, then I can say, I like you, or there's something likable about you, or something lovable about you. So it's a positive feeling. So that's another aspect. Another aspect is, and that's where I think maybe this gets deeper, is because of my orientation and both professionally and then especially personally, is my orientation and my pursuit is that love, which partly is the, Dr. Fulford used to say, it's what held everything together. And then I have a little different feeling about that, but my feeling is it's the thing that is the manifestation of the presence of what is the unity of function. It's the underpinnings, it's the groundswell of from universal nothingness towards the presence of something that occupies all of space, and everything emanates from that. It's the power which is expressed through some template or some fulcrum, Dr. Still, in the mind of God, which is in a spiritual realm, but through the mind of God, and the power that drives that would be the potentiation and the presence of love that is the precondition. And so I think about that, I sit with that, I try to have that those kind of thoughts with me all the time in my life. And when I see that the other person in the meeting place of the other person and I, that both of us are in that stream, that I can see that that person and I are sharing, that we're in the flow of the stream of the thing that's the undercurrent that runs through everything, including us, then I can begin treatment. Then I can engage that person in a structural way, because my reference point is not mechanics. It's the whole of the person and the power that's really drives life, that's underneath all of life. The other thing about that I just would to finish on that possibly is when my hands are on the person, now the person's on my table, and I always feel this way, and it's been my practice for evolving and been my practice for a long time, is to remember that always between our hands is a space. And so not only do you have the physical anatomic presence of what's between the hands structurally, But all of the person, mind, body, spirit, as an expression of the love, all of that is occupying the space that's between my hands. And so in that regard, once we're in the flow, and then between my hands always is an awareness of the love that permeates everything, not just between my hands, but everything. So now the person or I are in a meeting place that's in the flow of potential and where all the power is. And then as an osteopath, it's only the one in love is, in a sense, it's one fulcrum, but I like to think of it as no fulcrum. It's the one place where there's no fulcrum, but in a sense, that is the one fulcrum. And we're all fulcrum harmonized. There'll be peace, like Dr. Still said. And when we're in resonance in that way, as Dr. Blackman always says, which is one of my favorite statements, is that only anatomy perceived, that's anatomy in trouble. So when we're in unity of function, you mash on people and you don't perceive the specifics because everything's integrated in a unity of function. It's only when we perceive a problem that it's revealed to us as a fulcrum independent of the whole. So now to see a part, which by definition is a lesion because we perceive it as a part, with the underpinnings of the love that incorporates the whole, now we're engaged in an osteopathic treatment. So that's the reference point for treatment. And so we treat the part with OMT, with the specifics of our technique, with whatever we think we want to address in terms of, as a physician, our diagnosis. Is it metabolic? Is it structural? Is it traumatic? Is it emotional? Is it spiritual? Those are all lesions by definition because they're all out of context with the whole. But in reference to love, then we have a place that we can reference to where health resides. And then that's how we approach patients. That's the beginning of our time with patients.
There's a lot to unpack there. That was great. Follow-up question.
It's early in the morning, man. Just getting started.
Yeah.
You're heating me up.
This is a great start to the day. I'm getting fired up myself. So you talked about knowing that you, the patient in front of you, and you as a provider, you're in the flow state, you're in the present moment, you're in circumstances of seeing the person for who they are, in an environment of love, to use your words.
Yeah.
How do you know you're there, and then now I can start my osteopathic treatment?
Yes. So it's a difficult, I'd have to think of a lot about what you asked because, you know, this has been kind of my mantra and my teachings, you know, from my teachers and also my personal path. So I've always yearned to live in the presence of feeling connected and feeling love. So it is personal for me. And so I do sit with that all the time. And so there's the part where as people, and you know, I'm really introverted. I don't know if I'm shy or just anxious, you know, an anxious person, but, so it's not exactly natural. So socially, it surely doesn't manifest as much as I would like. But in terms of my internal path, so when I hold that space and that priority, that love is everywhere, love is the what's present in the pause or underneath stillness. Stillness is a fulcrum that can be mechanical, but it's also another thing that's below where life is in motion. Life is in motion, and then the fulcrum of that motion would be stillness. And then in the stillness is a presence where the power and the potential for life to manifest comes out of stillness. And so for me, as I sit with that for decades now, I always say, you know, what's the presence? What's the through the fulcrum, through the doorway of stillness, to start perceiving that in that opening, that is something present. And then I started associating that with love. So there's two things, because there's the mind of God, which is not love. The mind of God is a thing that is an aspect of oneness, but the love for me permeates everything. So all these kind of concepts, as I was introduced and as I was pursuing these things over many years, you start holding the intention that's what makes sense to me. That's where I want to go. That's what I believe is the basis of reality. And then you touch it, and then you touch it, and you touch it. And then it starts becoming more accessible, and you start perceiving fulcra, stillness, presence, more and more and more, and it starts becoming second nature. So it's not external, or it's not an aspiration. It's not a shift of consciousness. It's actually always there. And then my awareness of the groundswell of the love and stillness are always present. So then it's more the changing and the evolution and the maturing of me as an individual, I hope, that makes me more present to what's there in the first place. I'm an emanation of it. It's not there because I perceive it. It's already there. And in my ignorant existence, I'm unaware of it. So I'm just growing in that. So that's been, you know, a lot has been my own pursuit, is to grow in the maturity of being able to sit in the opening through my life. So, you know, then it's like, oh, while I'm driving a car, while I'm eating dinner, while whatever I'm doing. And then it's like, oh, there's the spaces between. And I'm just going to, oh, is there love present while I'm watching the Super Bowl? You know, it's like, there's always something more bigger, because whatever our attention is on is always a lesion. It's always a limited aspect of the total potential. So it's more, it's a path. I mean, that's why I think osteopathy is a spiritual path, because it has built into it an ultimate destination. The ultimate destination is actually unknown to all of us, because we're all limited. But if you have that as a mantra, what's more? What's more? And anything that I perceive is a lesion, because whatever I perceive is a consolidation of potential. So keep holding and having compassion for what we are aware of, but know that there's more and more and more, and keep expanding. And then ultimately, I haven't found anything to replace love. So that's been, you know, whether it's a limitation, but I haven't realized that one fully. I'm working on it. So that's the process. I think that's the process. So we grow into what's always there in the first place, and we keep introducing little things like, I you know, there are many years I used to remind myself, oh, so the person's sitting on my table. I begin my treatments with people sitting. So they sit, I have my hands on their shoulders. And then it's like, what's the shoulders, the space between my hands, the space that is the space that anatomy resides in. Then that space is beyond my hands. That space is beyond my room. And then what's the presence that occupies that space? And then what is the experience of that presence? So these are things that I always work on a daily basis. But it becomes second nature. It starts becoming more and more ordinary, to, oh, that's me. I mean, that's how I look at things. So I don't work at it like I used to, but I love being in it. So that's our practice, right? Where that we live the practice.
Sure. Do you ever have patients that come to your practice that their love tank is empty, or you really struggle to find something in that person that's lovable?
Yes, it's absolutely true. And what I have to say, I mean, this is it's served me, so I don't want to, this is not contrite at all. But as an osteopath, when we know that underneath everything is health, which is the manifestation of the power of love into living, into an expression of life manifesting. And health cannot be traumatized. That health is perfect. It's there before conception. It's sparked in conception into form. It can't be traumatized and it's perfect. And that's why we say that, when we do OMT to have the spirit, that there's something of perfect intellect that knows where it's going and what it wants to aspire to, that's beyond any of our intelligence. It's vastly smarter than we are because it's perfect and it has the template of the human being that we might be destined to be. So that's in every person. So that for me, when I was younger, was harder because I was more reactive. And I think also when I was younger and felt like I was still, we all are always, but more so, I was preoccupied in defining who I was as a person. So if I'm struggling and finding out who am I, then I'm reacting to who the other person is. But at this stage, when I feel that who am I is not me, but I associate who am I with the process of being in the sea of what potential is, and you see that in another person. And so you see it in the other person, and that's beneath the personality. It's beneath what they think their suffering is. And on that level, which is in them, is love and is lovable. And that's what we tap into as osteopaths. We're not struggling with their personality or their character or even their anatomy. We're tapping into the direction that they were born to go on. That was the journey they were destined to go on. And that's love. So we came from love. And we're going back, and then there's cause and effect in between, and we're trying to grow in consciousness and love and experience and engagement in life. So that's in every person. So as I think as I focused less on needing to find out who I was, so this is a maturing process, right? So as I focus less on myself and what replaces that in terms of the collective and myself and my suffering as reflective as everybody's suffering, which is the human condition, what that means. And then this person in front of me is a human being in the human condition with its own unique expression. But underneath that is the perfect template and love and the potential. So you can see that in every person. It can't be, there's no pathology ever. It can't be traumatized. If that was traumatized, they die, because that is the perfect form. And we can't survive without that being in the perfect form. Or that's how healing happens. There's always that perfect form looking for expression. So you see that in the other person. You go, okay, let's go. Now you came in, you have low back pain or you have a migraine. So then, and I did want to complete that question you had about the migraine, because see, then with all of that as a spirit, the spirit of the intention of all that, then you put your hands on it, and now you're going, you can think, you know, is this vascular? Is there an allergic trigger? Is there a stress trigger? Is there TMJ? Is there, you know, whatever are the possibilities? That's, we're trained. I mean, these are all in a differential and they all matter. But at the same time, if we sit in that potential and at least for a time to go, talk to me, please reveal to me what the fulcrum, you know, what is the expression of a lesion in cause and effect that's struggling, that's manifesting as this vascular experience in the skull? And then you'll say, oh, this seems like it's external. It's something environmental. You know, is that emotional, spiritual, environmental? No, actually, there's phenobasilar compression. And then your hands get drawn in there. Oh, structural, maybe structural. You know, so if then from the spirit of the totality, if we let the organism in the space between our hands connected to the power of the ultimate fulcrum, let it talk to us and show us a way. So I'm only so evolved, but to have that spirit and to work from that place, to have that be inspiration, then you do come up with answers that nobody else does. At least we're open to more possibilities and not like, you know, this is vascular, here's, you know, Zomig, you know, or, you know, it's like not to try to reduce it, to try to go to live a life where it's always an expression towards life. And that's why the people are coming to us, not reduce it down to shifting their experience of a lesion, but to at least have that we're in the expansion of what's the fullest life this person could have. So I think that's the difference. And so any condition, migraine or, you know, back pain or anything, it's the spirit of it that the game is not the doctor patient resolving the perception of suffering, but the suffering itself is an expression of a person's limitation of the potential of what we were born to do and express the love that we emanated from, and that this is one aspect of it. That's the lesion. And so we go towards the whole, we go towards the flow of life, to be full, to love more, to be whole more, to be more connected. So that's the spirit of treatment.
Okay. So essentially when I asked you the question, are there patients that come into your office with a bucket of love that's pretty much empty?
Yes.
You're saying that because every individual, when they are born, has health that is perfect, there is always something to love in every single person.
That's right. If not the love that they haven't connected to themselves. And by the way, thanks for redirecting me, because practically speaking, Now, I learned this with Dr. Jealous, and he was my greatest teacher, Dr. Jealous. And he used to say that healing, we learn medicine to go back to the point of departure for some unexpressed wholeness or health, which is the absence of symptoms. And he said healing is actually from the future to the past. The future holds our potential. And when we have our eyes set on the possibility and bring that to the present, we see where the lesion is held in the midst of potential. But that being said, in terms of your question, this is super, super important. And one of the areas of greatest satisfaction for me is when the person themselves are completely disconnected from love, or say it could express itself as chronic fatigue, exhaustion, deep pain, deep depression. So they're sick. They're really sick. But I know that there's something perfect in them, and that sits with love, and that's where I gotta touch that. So that's the point where in a practice, usually for me, I access it most on the sacrum. It can be on the head, but I settle in better on the sacrum, and this took me many years, like at least 20 years. But I have my hand on the sacrum, and when you feel the lesion, which is the depth of the immobility in the whole to express motion. So the inherent motion that every system has as life expressed, it's absent. And that's different than stillness. This is deadness. Stillness has a presence to it. And then there's deadness when the lesion is so consolidated. And that's reflective of what you're talking about, that this person is divorced from their heritage, from the heritage of health and the perfect form. And you perceive that, and there's nothing, there's no movement. So this is a really sick person. So I'm ex the extreme example of what you're asking, just from the initial interview, I wouldn't even know that they were this sick. But whatever degree, my hands under the sacrum, oh my God, there's actually no inherent force expressed through this person. They're disconnected from love, which is all around us. Then, for me, my approach is I have to find the resonance in their deadness with my stillness. And I get myself more and more and more sublime and subtle and still and quiet till I've, in health and in wholeness and in openness, can resonate as a resonance with their deadness. So when there's a meeting place of their immobility with my stillness, then the stillness that resides under their deadness can then find its fulcrum. And that becomes the beginning of coming back to life. So that's the burden of the osteopath, is to be able to be flexible, to move through states, to be able to resonate with the organization of the fulcrum, which the pathology in the other person is not expressing life. So I hope that's helpful. So I know the philosophy, and the philosophy is expressed in the person. But yes, they're part of their suffering themselves is that they don't know, they're unaware or don't experience love. They're disconnected from the totality. That's why they're coming in. That's why they have suffering. But I know that, and I not by constricting myself or using willpower, but I can tap into something more subtle than anything they got, because I know that there's something deeper than any lesion. There's health under the lesion. And then that health is more and more elusive because I have to get stiller and stiller to tap into it and resonate with that little place that's alive in them. And then when that happens, now, you know, normally just have like an elbow, you know, you can just set it up and do whatever you want to an elbow. That's all on the surface. Here they're deeply sick. It's the same principle, but you're establishing the fulcrum. But then it demands of us, we have the burden of resonating with something that subtle in order for that to be seen, and then it can awaken in them. And so love is the same. They're just disconnected, but under the love is the doorway of stillness to love. You know it has to be there or they'd be dead. So it's there, but we can't, it runs from will or from efferent action. It's with resonance and openness, its efferentness can then find a channel to express itself again. So we know it's there. So it just becomes a practice to see it in other people.
I see. You mentioned a phrase that caught my attention, and I think you said it was Dr. Blackman who said this.
Yes.
Only anatomy perceived is anatomy in trouble.
Yes.
So when you're talking about anatomy in trouble, you've used this the word fulcrum a number of times.
Yes.
Fulcrum, is that a manifestation of the anatomy in trouble? Is the fulcrum the expression of a lesion or an expression of an area of the body or a perception from you as the healer or the provider of someone who is not moving emotionally, someone who does not have structural inherent motion, someone who may have spiritual bogginess, if you want to say that word, I'm not sure.
Yeah. So the way I think about it is, if we work as a totality, as one unit of function, and everything is flowing as one unit of function, you touch somebody and you're touching all of them. So they're one unit. If you touch somebody, mind, body, or spirit, and you're engaging with an aspect, so then that aspect is expressed as an aspect because it's trying to resolve some force. There's a force and cause and effect that entered the system, and the system is in a reactive state to the force that was introduced. And then that reactive state is trying to resolve, but then it establishes itself as a self-referencing adaptive mechanism and can't merge back into the totality. That's a lesion. So the lesion is seen as a fulcrum. There's a fulcrum in the totality. That's the non-resolution of a reaction to a force that entered that person's life. If they resolve that fulcrum, they're back in totality. So we're always in a cause and effect world. We're always going back and forth between reactive and non-reactive. So these are fluid states. But then when people come in because they're chronically suffering, that chronic state never resolved, and they're stuck in their adaptation. That's the best effort they can make. So then we perceive vectorial forces and fulcra. They're organized. That was the best they could do. And that becomes the doorway to find the health again. So it's only our perception of something out of context with the whole that defines the lesion. and the health is in the lesion because the health is still present, trying to resolve the forces that was reacting to in the first place.
So when we talk about anatomy perceived, it seems like the perception of the provider is very much linked to this concept of stillness. Your perception as a provider, I guess my first question is it linked to stillness? My second question is, can your perception actually be wrong?
That's such an important thing, and it was a point that I wanted to make to people learning. So I aspire and to grow in my life in the direction of awareness of stillness. Yes, it's a critical thing for the practitioner. We talk about osteopathic imagination. And one of the things that I love talking to younger people about is that we only help what's true. We don't help what our imagination or our desire, as good as our intention is, that does not heal people. We only can help what we perceive. And so it's a good practice not to please anybody and not to uphold our own self-esteem, to try to imagine that we're feeling things or projecting things onto people that aren't there. So our capacity to be truthful and actually perceive what's present is how we're going to help people. So we grow in our sensitivity and our own afferent nature to receive what's present. And the stillness is not a projection. The stillness is everywhere. And so we don't go into another person's stillness or into their health. It's everywhere. And then our ability to submit and be present to the stillness that's everywhere and the health that's everywhere, while at the same time perceiving that in the other person, then that health there can resonate with the health that's everywhere and tap into the greater power instead of self-perpetuating it's on its own drive to resolve its own suffering. There's so much more power accessible, but the self can't do that. It's already used up its power through that effort and that self-references. So we have to be careful that if we project in any way, and this is a process. I mean, we all fall short, but to the extent that we project onto others our goodwill, our desire, the perfect image, any projection itself is a fulcrum. It creates a point of reference, and that is not, and we help a lot of people in osteopathy doing osteopathy that way. But osteopathy has more potential than that because the mind of God is vastly smarter than we are. And so the opportunities for healing are vastly greater than our intellect. So to let the fulcrum present be the doorway to what's bigger and receive that and resonate with that. And then Dr. Jealous used to talk about split attention. So anything that we perceive, to put that on our shelf, on our personal shelf, this is the quadratus lumborum. The rib is out of place. Just put it on the shelf. Don't impose, don't work on it. It's there on the shelf. Here's the inherent motion. Put that on the shelf. Here's stillness. Put that. So these are all things that we hold in the space of what's present. While we let all those things be present till the system can recognize itself enough to generate its own directionality to pull out of its stuckness in the adaptive mechanism. So I don't know if I answered what you asked on that one.
how do you get the system to recognize the lesion or the lack of motion? How does that happen?
Oh, it does that because the health is stuck underneath the more superficial adaptation. So when we can then shift our consciousness to resonate with what's present, then the presentness says, oh my God, I'm not a stuck, you know, T12 on L1. I'm not a stuck that vertebra doesn't move. But then there's this thing I forgot. That thing operates on a fulcrum that's much deeper. That's my own health. So when we can shift our consciousness to find the deeper one goes, oh my God, it's like it wakes up because it's supported and it wakes up to its own power. And it's like it restarts the system towards what it was designed to do. And it gets a fresh opportunity to express itself, that it forgot its own identity and then started believing it was going to, it disconnected and started buying into the idea that the adaptation was the self, and forgot that the self was vastly bigger than that. And it forgot. So it allows the lesion to stay there, and it wants to save its power to other places in the whole. And it disengages. But if we see the lesion as a doorway to that health, the health goes, oh my God, I forgot who I was. And then it can start that machine to start moving through the lesion and start incorporating back into the totality. So that's our work, is to resonate, to more deeply match, not to impose, not to project, not we know better, not that we know that what this is supposed to look like. We do that too, because sometimes, you know, something's ankylosed, something is fibrosed. It needs help mechanically. So we have our techniques for that. I am the first one to, I'm a technique machine, you know, but then in the spirit of moving the part to see that deeper thing that actually can restore the totality, that's the game. And then the person is back in the process of the movement of life towards destiny. And that's for me, my passion as a practitioner is for people to rediscover what their promise was, what was the life, what's the greatest life that was their conception, that they're just starting the journey at conception. But what was that fullest life that built in to be, so that lesion, knock out that lesion, can they get back in the flow of the stream of moving that way? And that's a better life. It's a happier life for people.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So if the patient going back to your example, has that T12 lesion, maybe lacking inherent motion, T12 on L1,
yeah.
Are you placing your hands there, or are your hands still at the sacrum and you're feeling lack of motion there at T12, L1? And then with your intention, are you going from the realm of the mechanical, the corporeal, to trying to find or resonate with the underlying health? And by doing that, trying to kind of reawaken and revitalize the health that's lost, that is manifesting at T12, L1?
Yeah, so it's a super good question. And then this is where all of us, I think the principles we all understand, and then all of us have our way. So a lot of my great teachers, a lot of my colleagues, they do it all different ways. You know, you'll see people that'll treat the whole body from the feet. You know, some of our great teachers, you know, would treat the whole body from the head. And so the projection of their awareness of the whole from any handhold, like I have an ability at times on a good day to perceive the whole from the part, but my confidence or my trust in myself, I don't feel that I can bank on that regularly. I can draw on it, and I'd use that in diagnosis more. Where is the system drawing me? And then that draws me to the isolated part. But I wouldn't usually myself treat that way. But say I'm on the sacrum, and like you say, oh, there's starting to be some motion in the sacrum. And actually, oh, you know, it looks like the flow of that motion is dampened or restricted at T12 L1. I'll go to T12 and L1. I'll move and I'll go there. Usually I'll keep one hand under the sacrum. I love being on the sacrum. And then I'll put my other hand under T12 L1. And then my feeling is not in the spirit of correction, but in the spirit of when we're working on this level to allow the health to express. Then structurally, my fingers will try to approximate physically the positioning or the force to match what's at T12 L1. So my hand will conform, like if T12 is rotated right and extended, my hand will acclimate to that position. So not hopefully, not more, not less, but approximates the physicality of that point in space. Then usually the best of my ability, I'll try to incorporate more of the anatomy that's part of that lesion. If to the best of my ability, the ligaments, the dura, the CSF, the spinal cord that's in front of that, the vascularity in front of the spine on that level, the organs, the peritoneum, all more and more to get an expanded view of any anatomy that's in relationship to that part, which hopefully structurally, to some extent, is in a sweet spot where it's kind of I'm facilitating the fulcrum so it doesn't self-identify, but I'm to some extent supporting the work that it's doing, that I'm in my approximation of its holding pattern, I become the fulcrum. So now the two of us are in space together around the fulcrum that's their lesion. When that happens and the physical part is a little bit floaty, that's the door. Now, then I ask, there's an opening. Can I perceive inherent motion? The space between expansion and contraction, flexion, extension, there is a stillness. Underneath the stillness, there's a presence. Underneath that presence is love. Underneath that presence is oneness. And I go through those layers in my mind to perceive what the opening, but the osteopathic engagement I think of it that way, and that's my language, is that the work of self-perpetuating the illusion that's it's required to perpetuate that lesion. It's in the illusion that those forces can't resolve. And that was the best compensation the body can make. That's work. That's why the person is tired. That's why they have pain. And if I can take over gently, not to correct, but to float, so that fulcrum is being shared with me. And if I can take over some of that work, that we're floating in space together as one fulcrum, the door opens because all that power that got disengaged in them can find a crack to start expressing itself through. And so then we wait. We wait there and we wait for that lesion, for the T12 L1 to start moving in their own and their relationship with each other to change. So it's more the reminding of what its nature was, more than us fixing anything or imposing on it. And I go back and forth a lot of times in my own practice, because I came to osteopathy later. I was a family doctor first, and I recreated in practice an osteopathic education. So I was late to the game. And I started with HVLA and muscle energy counter strain. I went through a re-education over years. And I think I recapitulate that a lot in my treatments. So I'm fond of HVLA and I'm fond of muscle energy. I love FPR. And so I tend to do that and I love it. I love feeling that I'm correcting and stuff. So even this thing that we're talking about, many times I've done an intervention at T12, L1 to just get it rustled up. You get it some motion in there so it's not ankylosed. It's partly to accelerate the process, partly to be more efficient, and also get the person some relief right away so that they don't need 10 visits to get the action in there. But I'll move it around a little bit. But once it's moving, the little bit, the crack opens, and then that's where I spend most of my time, is aligning myself with the adaptive fulcrum, that we are the adaptive fulcrum, and then the work that's lessened in their system to perpetuate is now liberated to resonate with the health and the whole. And then when that happens, that's a treatment. That's what we wanted. We wanted the person to get back to totality.
Yeah, I like how your approach is very respectful of the individual's underlying health. You were saying, your philosophy or your treatment is very much rooted in the philosophical principles of osteopathic medicine.
Yeah, and we all do it. We're all individuals. We all have our levels of what we need to express, and so everybody's treatment looks different. So that's why I'll tell people we agree on principle, but who I am, my size, like I'm a big guy. I love high velocity. It's easy for me to do. For me, it's easy to find leverage and impose and just gap a joint. Other people are more slight or whatever reason, or they don't want to, they consider it a form of aggression. So we each have our way. But this idea of serving life, and we're all the same. And my mother, who was the reason I wrote my book initially, my mother, my greatest inspiration, she used to say that, we have the education that somebody needs. They don't come to us because of our brilliance or because we're special or because we're different, but we have the privilege of getting educated for a type of help that this person needed in the moment. Tomorrow, the auto mechanic I treated might need to replace my tire, and I'm completely dependent on them. I need their education tomorrow. Today, they need what I know about a vertebra. So we're actually 100% equal. And now's my time. Now's their time that they need me. So the role itself is a lesion in the moment, established by the demands of the moment, and it's a lesion, but that's an illusion. In the totality of things, we're equal, and we're all servants of the human condition. And so now you need me and my education. Tomorrow I need you. And so we serve. We're there to serve. We're not there to demonstrate how special I am, or we know what the human condition is. We know where healing comes from, and we're a servant to that. And then this moment, you come in seeking relief of your expression of that suffering. and tomorrow I come to you for my expression of my suffering. So it's in that service. It's not about you or me. Our personality is a lesion. Our personality is a result of how we adapted to what was unresolved in our own lives and our childhoods and what was meaningful to us in our lives. It's itself is a lesion when we identify with it, but the human condition and life to serve that. And then we have an education. Oh, and then there's a rib cage and then there's a peritoneum. And, you know, so we have an education to resolve people, but not as a business, not as a skill, but because we have the great honor and privilege of serving the manifestation of life that came from spirit. So it's a noble calling. It's a great calling. And we're honored, you know, to be in that situation. So of course, yeah, we're respectful because I'm serving the depth in another person.
Definitely.
As deeply as I know of myself that I would want to honor and respect it as best I can. It's the same for somebody else. So we're just applying. We have the privilege of applying, oh, for God's sake, osteopathy, to think about love all day or think about God all day. Or, I mean, it's unbelievable life, you know, an unbelievable path.
So I love that we are in a profession of service.
Yeah.
Would you say that our ability as osteopathic physicians performing osteopathic medicine, we are more efficient, we get better results, or we maybe enter that flow state more easily if we ourselves are in a maximum or potentialized state of health ourselves in mind, body, and spirit?
Yeah, this is something I think about a lot because, I'm just a person and I fall short and I have, you know, a lot of bad habits. And so, you know, I'm not fully realized, don't eat as good as I could, you know, so what I hope, I swear I pray for this and I hope every day that I'm embarrassed sharing this, but what I hope every day, honestly, is that the principles of osteopathy themselves demonstrate the capacity for kindness and compassion for my own flaws. And that when I think of stillness and when I think of love and I think of compassion, I try to think about things which transcend my own capacities. And to the extent that I can surrender. So in other words, none of it, all of it is beyond what I can do and what's beyond my willpower, that we're talking about things that are beyond anything that I could do. And so myself, it's my aspiration. So, you know, that I sure know that the more that stillness has been incorporated into my life, my ability to perceive it in more places or as a constant state of being, and then to perceive it in other people has increased. And the ability to perceive love in other people, even though I'm having a bad day, but it's not my love, it's the love that's present, that's different than my love that I have for my wife or my kids. It's not that love. That's the love of myself, my personality, and my ego. And that's living in an embodied state in the world. But the love, at least as a mantra or as an aspiration. So I hope, I have to have compassion for myself, that in my own limitations, which are endless, that at least when it comes to my intention and my work, I hope that I'm tapping into something which is vastly more powerful and reliable than it's not on my shoulders. That the principles of the fulcrum and the doorway to health and the presence of stillness transcends me and my imperfection. I do think I admire a lot of my friends. They live cleaner lives, or they're nicer people than I am, or I admire them that way. They have their own struggles. But I don't know if it's any easier for them. I do believe we just do the best we can, and whatever we do, it makes it easier. We're more present, we're more available to the other person. And it's not up to us. So we have our fulcrum. We're trying to grow as people, we're trying to mature. And to the extent that we're not self-referencing our own compensations, then we're more available for other people's compensations. So I hope so. I hope that the universe is kind enough to not, when it's all said and done, it's not up to me that the other person gets better. It's actually up to the universe to get them better. And our ability just to perceive the doorway, and that they can reconnect with the greater flow. That's the game. You know, it's too much to think about that we could keep chasing some level of perfection, and it's actually a lesion in itself. So like, think about Herb Miller. You know, boy, did he have habits. I remember, I won't even reveal them. They were like at courses. He's also one of my greatest teachers. But geez, oh man, I mean, you look at the guy, there was a weekend where the whole weekend he was bleeding from his nose. High blood pressure. He had a lot of bad habits. He's the guy I feel this way. If my life depended on it and I had one osteopath to save my life, it'd be Herb Miller. And that guy, he bled all weekend from his nose because of his health. And, you know, and it's like, but he puts his hands on you. It's like, oh my God, Herb, you know, oh my God, you know, it's like he was a gem, you know, like, so it has to be our own lesions. If we're subject to our lesions, then we're limited by our own fulcra. If in spite of our lesions, we reference health, then we're still in the potential and what's possible. So what we're trying to do in osteopathy is bigger than any of us. And I hope so, that otherwise it's just, I mean, we fought a good fight. We made a good effort, but we weren't sure. Nearly as what we thought we were. We were really very, very limited. But I don't feel that way. I think I'm limited, but the principle of osteopathy is a doorway to unlimited potential. And we just need to find the doorway and then do our best. So if we can focus on the doorway, in spite of our hunger or our loneliness or our depression or whatever, but we can still hold the doorway for somebody else to open, we've done our job.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. We're all human beings, you know, walking through life with its ebbs and flows, and we all have our bad habits and we have limited intelligence and limited palpatory skills and limited knowledge of anatomy and physiology. And we haven't read every book on medicine that exists. You know, we're all extremely limited. Yeah. I don't know Herb Miller. But yeah. I think someone could have like raging high blood pressure and hyperlipidemia out of control and peptic ulcers and, you know, the list goes on and on. But they still have a profound spirit. You know, they could have the greatest empathy, the most patience and kindness, and meet the person where they're at. And maybe that's what you're experiencing when he puts his hands on you. I don't know.
I think so. He really had some. By the way, just like a little story from Miko Sorrell, Dr. Sorrell. So, you know, for me, one of our greats. And she tells a story. So one of her great teachers. I'm so sorry. That's another person that I love. This is Rachel Brooks. So Rachel tells the story about Roland Becker. So, I mean, he was her great teacher. She spent more time with him than probably anybody we know. And later in his life, it was around 1990, he had had a stroke. He was always a quiet person, but he essentially stopped talking after the stroke. And she went to visit him in the nursing home or wherever he was. And, you know, a fraction of the person he was, you know, as a younger man. And then he pointed to the table, and she got on the table, and here was this guy. I mean, he had like, I think he had tremors and stuff, you know, like all this. And she let on the table. And then when they were done, she got up. Oh, I'm going to cry. I'm sorry. She says, "Roland, I that was the best treatment ever." And it's our nature, and we develop and we learn and we integrate osteopathy into our own personal expression, our own beings, our own unique expression of life and personality. But we live the principle in our own way. But the principles come to that point, and it became his nature. And here he was, you know, with so much limitation after his stroke, but to hold the fulcrum and to sit in stillness had been so incorporated, and his fulcrum wasn't his, was so in the fulcrum, in the universal fulcrum, and the best treatment ever. It wasn't him, it wasn't on his shoulders, but he embodied the principles of osteopathy. And that's another one of our all-time greats, Dr. Becker. But these people, they each had personalities, and then the lesion of their personality, as I like to say, that each of our egos are necessary, but are lesions, because they create a fulcrum from which to view a partial reality of what's truly real. And then so our egos are an adaptive mechanism for life, but then the universal fulcrum, can we touch that, which is beyond our own ego and our own fulcrum? And then and we can do osteopathy no matter how limited I am as an individual. Yeah,
definitely. You know, I think when, at least in my perception of the universe and of society and of people, what we all have this underlying health. I believe that we're all born with this perfect, maybe perfect health, unless you have some genetic illness or autoimmune disease. But beyond that, I think that the underlying health is probably intimately related to an individual's desire to be loved for who they are, actually. And I wonder how much that is underestimated actually in the healing process of helping kind of wake up that underlying health, that person actually feels, this provider in front of me actually sees me for who I am. They're listening to my words. They're listening to my nonverbal communication. They're perceiving the emotions behind my words, and they feel incredibly respected. But I think you could also use that word, that patient in front of you feels extremely loved. And I agree with you. I think that's extremely powerful in healing, and maybe even more so in our profession, where we are placing our hands on people, and not only placing our hands on them, you know, it's like two consciousnesses, two human experiences interacting.
I completely agree. And, you know, this June is a little plug, but this June at the Cranial Academy, I hope so many people will come. It's going to be a great conference this year. That's the director is Kathy Gill, who I'm not sure, but, you know, arguably spent the most time with Dr. Jealous, and, you know, grounded in biodynamics, and a beautiful person. And it's going to be a great conference. So this June, I have the honor, in spite of my fear of public speaking, I have the Sutherland Memorial Lecture. And one of the things I'm going to talk about are the principles of osteopathy and how they're reflected from my own tradition of mysticism in Judaism, is Kabbalah. And one of the models in Kabbalah is that, you know, in the beginning, all there was the oneness of the universe, and that mind, and there was God, you know, was the thing that filled all of space. And the model is that, why did God create the universe? And God, the model that I come from is, when you're everything, you don't have a relationship with anything. So it's the nature of God, the missing piece of God is the need to be in relationship, but God's everything and can't have a relationship. It's a dilemma. So God created the universe, which is God. Everything is God, but he created a universe that itself doesn't know its own divinity. So each of us walk around, all of creation exists divorced from its true nature, because it references itself in cause and effect. It's in a lesion state. So the material universe is in lesion of its own lack of knowing that it's connected to everything. And when the universe uplifts its consciousness to realize the divine, that completes the cycle of descent into matter and the return to spirit. And that's the purpose of the universe. So when it's our nature to be in relationship, to need relationship, and with the underlying basic reality that underneath everything is love that holds everything together, then we have the need for a relationship. So when somebody resonates with us, it's not their love, it's the resonance that makes us remember our own true nature, our own coming from love, and our own sense of wholeness, which is our heritage, that we emanated from that in the first place. And then we're living life. That was the promise in the beginning, before everything post-conception traumatized us into some self-reference. But where we came from, our divinity, was there before we were conceived, and it's where we're going after. So the game is coming to realize that while we're in the world, so we can have a full embodied experience and not just know the principle while we're disembodied. That can go on for eternity. But if we're embodied, we can see it as a whole experience. In osteopathy, to aspire to have people get in that stream, wow. I mean, nobody in the world can aspire to what we aspire to for other people. And I did want to say on that regard is that, And so do come to the Cranial Academy conference in June. It's going to be incredible. And then I did want to mention, so especially, talking to students and talking to younger osteopaths, is that all everybody with our limitations, like Ben, like you mentioned, and we're doing the best we can as human beings, but we really should, I'm sorry. Really should be proud of what we're doing and the direction that we take to aspire to perform osteopathy and to grow in osteopathy and grow as people. And no one in the world does what we do with our education, with our licensure, and the combination of spiritual and material forces to work with. Nobody has that combination of training or as a direction, as a principle to put it all together in service for other people. And then for us as individuals to be able to serve, to go beneath the lesion of our own egos, to be of service selflessly to another person, to grow as people, to reflect, and to aspire to spiritual realization for ourselves and other people. There's nothing like it. And so just to grow as people, have compassion for yourself while you're having compassion for other people. And that, this the to me, the real secret of osteopathy in medicine is that in fact we are in relationship, and it's a joint effort between us and other people that are subject to the human condition and its innate suffering. And we're all just trying to resolve it because we came from a place that was one, and we suffer forgetting that our true nature, and then suffering in the cause and effect. And so that's the challenge of life and what religion addresses and all, and the eternal quest. But in osteopathy, we try to address the eternal quest in service for other people. With our background, it's I don't know anything that could come close that could cover all that territory. And then I hope I'm 1% that I can realize what I just said that for other people. But it's endless. But what a gift that we, an honor and a gift to be sitting where we do.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Friedman. I can't believe we already talked for an hour and a half.
Oh, it was too quick. And then the other thing too, a lot of the things that are more, personal and I hope inspirational. The joke in my life about the book that I wrote, that it really started out because I really wanted to write a memoir about my mother, and that turned into my own spiritual life and osteopathy. And I really wanted it to end up being an inspirational book for other people, and especially for, pre-meds and young osteopaths, and then so many doctors that are unhappy and forgot why they got into medicine in the first place or forgot their way. So I'd love, I'm laughing a little bit because I spent 30 years writing it and spent probably $30,000. And as my wife says, it was a very, very, very expensive hobby. So it's vastly beyond any consideration that if I make 1/30th of the return. But it really was a labor of love, and I would love young people to read it. I hope people would read it and then be inspired, and I'd love to get anybody's feedback if it resonated with them at all, like anything they got from my book, that is on Amazon. So that would be a little plug on that. But mostly come to Cranial Academy. It should be really inspiring this year, and people should learn a lot. And then these are the people that, since Dr. Jealous is gone, those of us who probably spent the most time with him today are the faculty for that course. So it'll be the best exposure to biodynamics, and also in the spirit of embryology, which for me is the in the material is the most sublime. Like from conception forward, it's the expression through embryology to manifest the form of structure and function in life. And then, of course, my own passion is going backwards from conception into the mind of God and the image, the perfect template. I love that. But on this side of manifestation, embryology is this side of the material fulcrum. And that'll be a great conference for embryology, too. So I hope all of the people listening will show up in June.
Yes, thank you for those plugs. And Dr. Friedman's book is Where Spirit Touches Matter, A Journey Towards Wholeness. And as he said, that can be found on Amazon.
That was beautiful to hear. It's a
May I include your email in the show notes in case people would like to reach out to you with questions?
That would be an honor. I love hearing people's reaction feedback, and I don't usually talk publicly very much, so it's an honor when you wrote me and asked me to talk, because I usually don't feel like I have much to say, but this was delightful for me. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. It was delightful for me, very enlightening. Something that I absolutely love about this podcast is talking to osteopaths with, you know, such a broad experience and so many years of practice. And it gives me insights, and hopefully insights to the people that are listening, on how to practice osteopathy, how to think about osteopathy. And, you know, as we've been talking about, how to live a more fulfilled life, full of love and compassion and respect for all living beings, especially the person in front of us. So thank you so much. It was very inspiring.
Okay. And I'll look forward to seeing you face to face one day.
Will you be at Convo in March in Colorado Springs?
I won't this year. I'm at another thing. So not this year, probably next year. Yeah. And then hopefully Crane Lake Academy. That's the biggest meeting for me every year. I love it.
Okay.
And, I think it's going to be really special. Do you know if you'll be there in this June?
Crania Academy in June. Unfortunately, I don't think I will be there. So I have graduation at the end of June, and then I'll be moving to Detroit. I'll be starting a sports medicine fellowship. So June is a crazy month for my wife and I.
By the way, just as a future plug, because, you know, it is my group, is the Cranial Academy, is my main group I identify with. Even next year for listeners is the cutting edge for where I think a lot of freshness and newness in osteopathy is the Rule of the Artery courses, which started in Australia. And Dr. Eric Dolgen from California is the director next year, and bringing in different angles of people who teach the approach to osteopathy through the circulatory, through the vascular system. So that's should also be a fantastic course. So that'll be next year, June. And that'll be a wonderful class too.
And I'll include the links to the cranial course in June in the show notes so people can sign up.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Dr. Friedman. Have a wonderful weekend, Super Bowl weekend.
go Niners.
Go Niners, that's right. You're close by.
I'm like 10 miles from the Niners.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Go Niners. I'm a Niners fan too. Okay, well, it's great talking to you. Have a great weekend. And
all right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye now. If you would like to connect with Dr. Friedman, you may at melvinrfriedmando@gmail.com. Check out his book on Amazon, Where Spirit Touches Matter, A Journey Towards Wholeness. And check out the link to the annual Cranial Academy Conference in June in San Diego, California. All of these you can find in the show notes. If you have any questions, comments, or would like to be on the podcast, please email the onmmpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Be well, be curious, and spread osteopathy.